and then got into finance and got into cost accounting, and that was part of my strength. Now I'm kind of an anomaly, so you won't have the one guy, so you got to have the two guys, but you got to bring those two parties together and have them play nice, because it's in both of their best interests, right? If you have strong processes and you kind of build up why these things are important, contract review, kind of all those things, like, hey, these are the things we got to do if we're going to do continuous close, we got to be doing these things, you got to have those process reviews, costing, what are we doing?
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Even though CFOs and controllers are responsible for driving the transformation inside the company, they often have to put the needs of their peers in operations, sales, and HR before their own needs. Also, technology decisions are always about trade-offs. If you make the life of the customer-facing teams easier, it would mean that your back-end teams might need to work harder to meet the expectations. What systems do finance leaders need to drive finance transformation? Is ERP enough, or do they need more? How to build the architecture that is going to drive the needs of the finance department? In today's episode, we invited a panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn who brings significant expertise to discuss implementing systems for the finance department. We covered many grounds, including several stories of finance transformation, including some horror stories and initiatives that resulted in the growth of the companies purely because of these financial innovations. Finally, we discussed several other concepts such as continuous close, standard versus actual costing, fixed assets, the chart of accounts, acquisition, and finance data warehouse. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. For today, we are going to be discussing the finance information architecture. Just for the benefit of our audience, as well as for our panelists, we are going to limit ourselves in the finance department. We are going to be living the life of a CFO, the AP guy, the AR guy, and whoever else is going to be inside the finance department. We are going to be discussing their roles and responsibilities and the kind of systems and the processes they are going to require to perform their job duties. We are also going to be taking the journey of the evolution of different companies at various stages, and we are going to be talking about different industries, the kind of, you know, micro industries, the kind of different finance requirements they are going to have. Before we dig into that, we will start with everybody's intros. Bob, would you like to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Great to be here, Sam. I'm Bob Feathers. I work for Bindable. We're in the InsurTech space. We're a SaaS provider providing technology for our clients to do alternate insurance distribution. But I come here with 30 plus years experience in the manufacturing space, client relations, finance, operations management, production management, business system implementation, specializing in ERP.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Bob. Dave, can I move to you for your intro next?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Sam. My name is Dave Chrysler, and I own a company called the Chrysler Club. We work with business owners to help them create the systems they need to make the shift from working in their business to working on their business. And I come here similar to Bob with more than 20 years in the manufacturing, both in operations, kind of front door to back door. So great to be here, Sam. Looking forward to a good conversation.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Dave. Scott, can I move to you next for your introduction?
Sure. I'm Scott Engelking, and I own a company called Grandview Integration. I spent 30 years in the corporate world in the pharmaceutical industry, leading shared services, running a SAP practice, doing a lot of process automation and improvement. And I've taken my show on the road as an independent consultant, working with various companies. helping them with things like process improvement, acquisitions, divestitures, basically any process or anything SAP related around the finance space and supply chain. Thanks for having me.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Scott. And just from the community perspective, we are fairly product agnostic. Our goal is to educate our listeners from the business process perspective. So we are going to be talking a lot about the business process and the stories that you guys have. So Bob, I'm actually going to start with you. So let's say if we pick a story of the information architecture of a finance department, I don't know if you are going to have multiple stories. I would prefer of maybe different industries, different stages of companies that you could talk about the kind of systems that they had. I don't know if the ERP system alone is going to be enough for the finance department. Do we need anything else for the finance department? For example, CPM, FP&A, if they need, when do they need? So do you want to start with some of these stories?
Sure, absolutely. You know, you would hope that you can keep your system architecture to a small blueprint, right? A small footprint of your business. So certainly ERP is your starting point because it's, as we like to say, it's your repository for your transactions, right?
Yep.
It's all the transactions that run your business, and you should be able to put them in this one place and take meaningful information out of it. So beyond that, I mean, maybe it's just a report writing tool, right? And, you know, you can kind of between the two develop and build your business. But outside of that, there may be some other pieces that ERP is really not good at, and fixed assets would be one of those areas.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, another area where you may want to address that, but it really depends on the business and how important that is and what drives your business, you know, acquisitions, things like that, where fixed assets become very critical. But again, going back to ERP and, you know, kind of the story I would share, which, you know, we talked about was global ERP implementation. And kind of the story really is getting to the root of semantics as your kind of starting point, right? Making sure you're all speaking the same language. And that's really the most difficult point, is that real foundational piece of kind of speaking the same language, making sure we're all understanding how people are thinking of things or how they define things, and making sure you have a clear definition of that. But also trying to, I would say, I don't want to use the word compromise too much, but kind of combine those, right? So if you have different plants, sometimes you can have a department and say, well, we can call that department something that means the same thing for two different plants without trying to get into, when I talk about streamlining, right? The idea is trying to keep your chart of accounts tight and not just arbitrarily build lots of accounts for everyone and say, oh, I need these 30 things. I need 100 things. I need these 200 things. It could be, well, what if we renamed it something like this and we all agreed upon it and it made sense, and then we kind of have a streamline, as long as it makes sense for your endpoint, which is, how am I going to measure my business? How do I want to measure my business? And, you know, what do I gain from that? And how am I looking at it? And how do I grow from it? If that makes sense, or as a starting point kind of for the conversation.
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much. And I'm probably going to have a clarifying question for you, if you don't mind. So obviously, one of the comments that you made is the ERP systems are not going to be as efficient in managing fixed assets. So tell us a little bit more in terms of why do you believe that ERP systems are not going to be really good at managing that? And why do you require a specialized system to be able to manage the fixed asset? So maybe talk about the lifecycle and the process complications and why that would fall short in case of an ERP.
Yeah, typically, when you think about resources in ERP system, they're really geared towards the work center. Really, like when I say they're really geared towards running the manufacturing floor. So they don't have a lot of information or like specs inside of it that really help you to think about, oh, when do I need to maintain this machine, or when's its depreciation schedule? There's a lot of other things that go on outside that ERP just isn't geared towards. It really is geared towards the transaction. And so again, when you look at your resources, there aren't a lot of tables and they're saying, oh, okay, here's where I add depreciation, here's where I put the schedule, here's where I do preventative maintenance. They may have, and a lot of times what ERP will have is they'll have a module. But again, typically those modules aren't really part of the system. They're kind of almost an outboard piece that kind of comes in. So it's, again, not to say you can't have fixed asset module, but that's typically not the kind of the starting point. So again, it's, you know, kind of in the traditional ERP world, it's your resource to run your plant. It's not really to do your, you know, your fixed asset schedules.
Yeah, very interesting commentary there. And I'm actually going to move to Dave, and maybe he's going to have some follow-ups there. So just one quick commentary based on what, Bob, you mentioned. Number one, there is a little bit of overlap there overall in terms of the functionality of what a CMMS system is going to do. And typically, they are designed for your asset management on the shop floor, on the operations floor, they are going to have your workflow for, you know, whatever you are going to do from the operations perspective. And then you have the financial workflow, which is completely different. When you are going to have, let's say, your vehicles or, you know, machines, they are going to have very different taxation structure. The books that you have maintained, the kind of, you know, depreciation schedule you mentioned. But the depreciation schedule is going to be, you know, in your finance department. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of companies use a specialized CMMS system and then a specialized, you know, I have not seen anybody using the specialized, the fixed asset module from the finance perspective, but that could be a possibility. Let's say if your core ERP was not really designed for finance, some ERPs are really, really strong at the financials, but they are not as strong on the operations. So the ERP systems that are going to be really strong at the financials, they are going to have really deep financial capabilities to be able to manage the fixed asset, but they are going to fall short on the shop floor needs. So Dave, I'm actually going to start with you if you have any follow-up commentary, and Bob, if you have any follow-up clarification, obviously just raise your hand. But Dave, if you want to start with your comments, do you agree, disagree? And then your story about the architecture for finance.
Yeah, no, thanks, Sam. Yeah, I definitely agree with what Bob was going to say. And I think you made a really great point in terms of looking at the ERP, you know, as we've kind of gone through the panel discussions and reviews of the different ERP systems out there. I think we've seen that, right? Some ERPs are more geared toward the operations side. Some are more geared toward the financial side. And so I think your comment was right on point in terms of if you have an ERP that is more geared on the financial side, then it should be robust enough to handle some of the fixed asset things that we're talking about. And that was really going to be one of my comments back to Bob, because that's been my experience with some of the ERPs that I've worked in, that we have been able to handle the fixed asset portion. Now, some of what Bob brought up in terms of the operations side, totally agree with both of you guys that gets handled kind of in a different system. So, you know, the other thing I think Bob really keyed in on, and again, it's similar to my experience. One of the largest implementations, ERP implementations that I helped work on was a 10 facility acquisition, happened all at once. They were all domestic facilities. So we didn't have, you know, kind of the global, factor in there. But what was interesting about what Bob said, and I think this is something really key to touch back on again, is just making sure that chart of accounts is in alignment, in that all of those facilities, whether you're talking about 1, 10, or 50, when you start to go through this process and identify those things, that was kind of first and foremost what we would go through during an implementation. Let's look at the chart of accounts. Let's see where the legacy system is at. And then how is that going to map over into the ERP that we're implementing? So I wanted to kind of touch on that just because I think that is where probably the majority of time should be spent on the front end, is making sure that happens. And I think oftentimes, I don't want to say we can take it for granted, but I've seen that happen in certain implementations, and it obviously slows the implementation timeline down significantly, and also creates a lot of issues in the long run, both in the short term and in the long run. So that chart of accounts, leading with that and making sure you let that flow through the rest of the operations. I know we don't want to talk about operations today, but it really does have an impact the whole way throughout operations. So if you don't start there and you don't get that hammered out appropriately on the front end, again, whether we're talking about one implementation or 10 all at once, you can just start multiplying the problems when you know, the more implementations you're doing at once. So
I am going to have a clarifying question for you as well, since you mentioned the importance of chart of accounts. And I completely agree with you both that, you know, the chart of accounts really defines the foundation, especially when we talk about the financial architecture. That's really the blood there overall in terms of the chart of accounts. So when we look at, let's say, the chart of accounts of the companies that you had acquired, so you are acquiring 10 different companies, and obviously you need to flatten everything out. You need to figure out, you know, what is going to be your 2B state, but there has to be a phased approach. So let's say if you are acquiring a company and they have really crazy chart of accounts, okay, and you were slightly more organized, I guess, when you were running your business. So now you have to take some sort of phased approach in flattening this, chart of accounts. So how would you approach this? Would you break it out, tear apart, organize everything? Are you going to fix your chart of accounts as well and then create the 2B state? So what will be your approach in streamlining the architecture in the phased manner, so you are not disrupting both of the businesses, but then you are going to have decent experience in Go Live. I mean, I'm going to use word decent because it's always going to be fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great question because to your point, right, you can't disrupt the business. So we have to keep things rolling. And yeah, I kind of have two stories. So the one I brought up about, the 10 acquisition facilities. And in that particular case, in the ERP system that we were bringing those acquisition facilities into, we had a great chart of accounts. So that was going to be ultimately the master. And what the process really looked like was going through and working with the finance team and in some cases operations to identify exactly what was being tracked and where, and then asking the question why, and then figuring out places that we could obviously roll things into. And ERP in general helps with that reporting function. And what I've found is a lot of times, and that kind of segues into my second story, because I'm actually in the process right now of helping a much smaller company implement a new system. And they do. They have an extremely bloated chart of accounts today. And what they're going to, or what they're looking to go to, is a very streamlined chart of accounts in a completely different system. And so, you know, the process is kind of the same because we're basically having to work through and say, okay, why were we tracking things like this previously? What data were you really hoping to be able to gain or you know, look at on whatever given period of time? And those are the types of questions that we've been asking to ultimately identify, okay, why did we need to look at this? What information was it going to deliver back to us? And then ultimately, how obviously can we bundle those, bundle those different accounts and get things more streamlined. So that way we're not having to write tons and tons of transactions and journal entries and, you know, correcting entries and, you know, reverse entries and all these different things. We can really streamline the entire process. And, you know, as you guys all know, right, the least amount of transactions we can get to, the better. And so that's kind of the two stories and how I would approach that particular situation.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Dave. So, Scott, I'm actually going to move to you. So, number one, we have to get the fixed asset out of our way. So, in your experience, have you used any specialized system other than what you have seen based on the acquisitions that you have performed?
Yeah.
And then any stories of the information architecture that you might be able to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you bring two companies together, you get to see these things where, you know, each company might be even using the same ERP, but in a different way.
Yeah.
One, and I'm actually working on an acquisition right now where the chart of accounts couldn't be more different. One is really simple and the other one is really, really complicated. And so there's an effort to, you know, to move and streamline those. And I agree with the comments that Bob and Dave made about, you know, the ERP is your system of record. And with the acquisitions and other projects I've worked on, I've gotten to see what different companies do and what tools they add on to the ERP. Just as an example, in the order to cash space, you know, there are AR tools that do cash application, collection, credit, disputes, you know, and they do it with, you know, everybody's talking about, artificial intelligence and RPA and other things. Well, some of these tools have these functionalities built in, you know, so you can get to some really high level automation by adapting a tool like that. And then similarly in the record to report space, you know, there are tools that easily bolt onto the ERP that can help you with your close, with your account recons, with your journal entries, you know, to really, you know, I know there's a lot of questions in here about controls and SOX, but, you know, you really don't have much hope at being compliant with a complicated process unless you are really very organized. And my experience is that some of these tools can really help you, especially where I've worked with absolutely global countries, you know, 50 countries around the world. Everybody's on the same ERP, luckily, but everybody's got different rules and regulations. You got to have commonality. And that's what, if you can use a common ERP and common tools globally and common processes, you know, you're really, that's where you'll begin to really improve your processes and your results.
Okay, so I am going to have a follow-up question for you, Scott, as well. So when you mentioned the order to cash and the record to report, these two processes, obviously, those two are going to be key processes of a finance department.
Yeah.
So now, you know, when we look at the entire journey, when you are using multiple tools, there is going to be a little bit of process and off. So number one, I don't know if you can provide some more colors there overall in terms of the kind of tools you had used in this architecture. And you can name at this point of time, because we have to get the context of what tools we are talking about, and then how the process handoff worked in different tools and what kind of data was shared. Because if the tools are not talking, then you cannot do your job, and then it becomes a far bigger problem.
One of the things that, you know, is great as you're a consultant, you can see how these tools adapt and expand over time and how everybody competes with everybody. And so an example on in order to cash, some of the banks have partners with some of these firms, you know, so you get, you can get some of this functionality by just your bank partner. And they may have a deal with, I think JP Morgan, you said it's okay to mention a few. So JP Morgan, I think, works with FinTech. And then there's a competing tool called HighRadius. You know, you can look at what each tool does and how it works and then decide what's the best for us and how many banks do you have? You know, the big question is, you know, if JP Morgan was your bank globally, and you might want to lean towards who their partner is. But if not, and you're using different banks all over, then you may need to come up with something else. So each project is a different animal. And, I've seen that these tools, are very different, and they grow and they change over time. And of course, the ERPs may, end up acquiring them at some point. So you have to deal with that as well.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Scott. So Bob, I'm actually going to come back to you. So now when we talk about these processes, right, order to cash, record to report. So I don't know if we have missed anything else in the specific processes that are going to be relevant to the finance department. If you could provide some more colors into the processes. And I was really hoping to get to the CPM and FP&A, because that's where the real play is. If you talk about creating the opportunities from the finance perspective. When we talk about, if finance is going to be simply the bean counter doing the accounting, then there's no sort of strategy. Hard to for them to get the seat in the board. But what I am really hoping to get from this conversation is going to be, how can we have these strategic CFOs that can drive the innovation right inside your CPM tool, FP&A, by analysis, by doing different, by analyzing different trends. So I don't know if you might be able to paint any colors there. So number one, the processes that I mentioned, if you have any other processes as part of the finance department. Number two, if you have any sort of insights related to the forecasting aspect of the finance, as opposed to just looking at the current state of the finance.
Yeah, I'll start with the first one, which is one thing we didn't talk about, we're talking about finance department, and is cost accounting.
Yeah.
It's really a critical component. And I think when you think about building building your finance department, is you really need to have a strong cost account. And you also need to have a really strong system person. That's really your system person, that cost accountant. Because as much as you're doing the accounting and the payroll and kind of that standard stuff, which is nothing wrong with that, but that's kind of like, that's over here. You're an ERP, you're a manufacturer, you've got transactions. And you can't just ignore them and say, well, at the end of the month, I'm just going to, journalize and fix it and make it look the way I want it to look. You want to have meaningful results. So going back to me, I think one of the topics we talked about is continuous close.
Yeah.
So when you think about the continuous close, the idea is I'm running my costing routines on a regular basis, and I'm looking at anomalies on a regular basis and trying to fix those things inside at a transactional level, so that I can have meaningful results that come out in my reports. I'm not going in and journalizing intent. So cost accounting is one, kind of looking through that whole process and doing it on a timely basis. And the other reason why you want to be timely about it is, you may, depending on the size of your organization, the size of what your business you're doing, is if you have a lot of transactions and you wait to the end of the month to run your costing, well, that in itself is going to take time, right? So we want to streamline our process. So you want to have a quick close because you want to get to the next period. You want to know what the results are so you can keep moving. If you have a lot of transactions, any ERP system, it actually takes time to run your costing routines. And it's kind of going through all that thing. It's churning. And so, again, if you're doing those on a more regular basis during the month, that close will be faster because you've already kind of done each week. Let's say you might do it daily, would be amazing. If you could do it daily, that's a lot. But if you could do it weekly, right, if you could cost and post weekly, do your transactions, do your analysis, make your fixes, while the month is going on. When you get to that last week of the month, it's only 1 week of transactions. You should be able to close faster. You should have more meaningful results because you've kind of fixed those issues, and hopefully you only have a bunch of small issues. But anyway, so to circle back, cost accounting to me is one of those really key components here when you're talking about ERP. Because if you're not doing that, doesn't matter how good your reports look, you're just doing a lot of, you don't really know what the jobs are doing, how the customers are doing, what the products are doing. So from that, going back to your forecasting thing is, as you start to look at these tools and you start to then, you can start to look at your trends. I mean, it's easy to say, right? But again, you can start to look at your trends, look at your business units, look at, you know, where your expectations are in terms of your burden absorption, the materials being used. You can start to forecast what your cash flow can be. You can start to look at it and say, well, I know what materials I'm going to be using, where I'm going to be needing this type of, you know, products going out the door. So should be able to start to forecast that thing, not only from my pipeline, but hopefully also just from results, right? And kind of knowing, but you'd have to have real results. If you're not getting good results out, then it's hard to report on that and hard to think about what it looks like forecasting.
Okay, some amazing commentary there and interesting insight. So number one thing, you know, thank you so much for bringing the cost accounting. That is super important. Obviously, the reasons for continuous close, if I know any CFOs, I mean, they all want to do the continuous close. Sometimes it may not be possible. We all know how the operational leaders or the sales leaders or the marketing leaders are going to react when you are going to ask them to send their bills. You know, they don't like to send them timely. So obviously, continuous close is going to be hard for any CFO. But the more important reason, in my opinion, when we look at the continuous close, why it is really important for any CFO or the financial executive is nobody likes to see any surprise bills. Nobody likes to see any surprise penalties. Nobody likes to see any surprise invoices. Okay? The only way to cure that is going to be if you are able to continuously close, because you will not be able to reconcile your financial statement. That's why the continuous close is going to be ultra, ultra, super important. And by the way, I mean, that's where the FP&A can play really, really important role, to be honest, in terms of forecasting the possibilities of different financial innovation that you can have. And I'm actually going to come back to you, Dave, after this. So let's say if we look at the FP&A, the importance of FP&A. If we look at the Lehman Brothers story, we don't want all of those financial products. You know, but we definitely want a lot of innovation happening inside finance from the revenue recognition perspective. The way you are going to recognize the revenue, you can do a lot more things from the CPM perspective. I don't know if you're going to have any sort of stories in terms of doing the future forecasting, how you are going to forecast your cash, how you are going to forecast inventory is not really the final thing, but that sort of ties together overall in terms of the connected planning. So number one question for you again is going to be, if we missed out on any processes that belong to the finance department that we did not cover yet, and number two is going to be the role of the future finance, creating the financial innovation. If you can talk anything about that you have seen from your perspective, that would be amazing.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I think, you know, Bob did a great job of kind of outlining on the cost accounting piece. That was a piece that I lived for many, many years of my life. So it bring back some memories there for me. And quick before I get into your questions too, Sam, I just wanted to touch on something that Scott had brought up, because I think it was a really great point and really key. And that was, you may have two different companies that have the same ERP that have implemented it completely different, whether you're talking about chart of accounts or operations. I thought that was just a fantastic comment to kind of set the stage for all of our discussions, whether we're talking finance today or some of the other things that we covered in some other panels. So I just, you know, kind of kudos to you, Scott, because you articulated that perfectly. So I just wanted to circle back to that for a quick second, Sam. And to get back into what we were saying, I mean, from my experience, all of the financial forecasting was done through ERP and through the cost accounting. That's been, you know, my experience throughout my career and even now as an independent consultant. We really rely on the information that we're getting, you know, both on kind of a micro level, so at a daily operational level, and then as we start to, you know, scale out and do forecasting. I mean, even going back to, you know, our planning cycle, we would be really focused in on all the details, all the variances that cost accounting was providing us. coming out of the ERP to go ahead and make forecasts for moving into the future, whether we're talking about next fiscal year or, you know, we're talking about next fiscal quarter. So that's really been my experience. We really rely heavily on both of those things.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. I'm actually going to move to you, Scott, next. So from your experience, did we miss on any of the financial processes so far that we have not discussed here? And number two, I am really looking for that financial masterpiece. You know, it was really result of, you know, not because of sales, mm-hmm. you know, it's the financial masterpiece that is coming really from the finance that resulted in some sort of, you know, business growth or something. And it's not because of IT, it's not because of digital transformation, it's not because of business model change. So this is going to be some sort of offering that you have created or restructured your finance the way that resulted either in revenue or some sort of profit.
Yeah, I can give you an example on that. And we didn't talk about P2P much. So I worked for a company for years and had a lot of focus on purchase to pay. And one implementation that was done, it ended up being a revenue stream because of, you know, once you really streamline accounts payable, automate, you know, all of your processes and all of your transactions, and then you can get discounts, early payment discounts, which is, you know, if you do the math on that, if you really implement that well, it can pay for your entire team. And so that's one where, you know, is that earth shattering for the company? I don't know. It was a pharmaceutical company, very profitable, but you know, to be able to say that you implemented a project that would have a return by taking all the early payment discounts you possibly can, you know, to pay for the implementation, I think that's something. I was going to give some horror stories on the CPM, you know, example. Yeah. I don't think that was done quite as well, at least in my prior company. You know, it's a super successful company, but when you look at the results afterwards, it's like, it's almost like you can't even plan at all. Now things come up and things happen, but it's like we might as well be throwing darts at a board in terms of the results of the planning if you compare it back. So, you know, they're working and trying to get better with that over time. My experience with implementing those types of softwares is that you need to be super cautious about the level of detail that you expect. Everybody wants to be crazy detailed and be perfect and add everything up from the bottom and, you know, come up with this perfect plan. But you really have to live in the averages, and you got to bump up a level and not try to, you know, forecast and plan everything down at a very, very detailed level, because you're going to die in the system. You know, the complexity, once you try to implement it and make that connection work with your ERP, it's not going to work. You're going to end up with a non-sustainable system. So I think that's the couple failures that I've seen in my career on those types of software is trying to be way, way too detailed and convincing yourself that you're better than you really are with planning.
Okay, amazing. So I'm actually going to have a follow-up question for you, if you don't mind. So can you provide an example of the detail that you felt was too detailed? It could have been slightly at a higher level so that listeners can get perspective on, you know, what is a detail versus where you should not be going too detailed.
Yeah. And I saw the postmortem after the project, and the company, you know, that sold the tool said, you know, we told you when we came in not to try to plan down at a cost center level, super detailed individual products in every individual country. And you're trying to build your plan, just this crazy minutia detail. And at the end of the project, basically the interfaces weren't working and the results weren't any better than they were before, you know? So basically, hey, let's throw this away and kind of start over. So it's trying to build your plan up, you know, on every single product in every single country or every individual cost center from a product perspective, that's just way too much detail. You know, you need to be living in the averages.
Okay, so let's say if you were creating the ideal system, a strategy, how would you plan?
I would talk to the provider and ask them and say, hey, if you're going to implement a tool, the last thing you want to do is use it in a way that the provider doesn't recommend. So I would bring that provider in and say, hey, you're not going to pick a tool initially, but bring in multiple providers through an RFI process and say, how is your, you know, here's our process and here's our company. How is your tool best used for us? At what level of detail and how should it be implemented? And the key is you've got to listen to them. If you try to force, and I think the providers are getting smarter to walk away from bad things. You know, they'll take your money, but they don't want a system that's going to fail. So I think that's the that's the starting point, is to come in and build your requirements and listen to that feedback from that provider. And when they tell you you're going down the wrong path, that's wrong for their tool, either switch tools or change your requirements.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Scott. Okay, so Bob, I'm actually going to come back to you. So let's talk about the financial horrors that you have seen that resulted in some sort of, you know, either loss or may have resulted in some sort of profit for the company.
Yeah, it's a real simple one, right? It sounds too easy to be true. Contract review. But, you know, do you actually have a really robust contract review in place at both the sales order level and at the purchase order level? And going back to the cost accounting, kind of really making sure you have the tools in place to look at these things. Because I can't tell you how many times I've seen it where a requisition gets put in, your system's not up to date, someone orders it from the client, you know, the vendor, and it comes in and you receive it at a certain value. And then the system's isn't set up right. You have the wrong unit of measure, whatever. You have things in there that are just incorrect. No one's looking at the keys of the store. And all of a sudden, you're going out and have bad transactions. No one's looking at the transactions. No one's really looking at the anomalies that are going on and not fixing it. And next thing you know, all of a sudden, you run costing and you get this massive influx of costs. And you're like, where did this come from? And it was some kind of bad inventory transaction that resulted from a bad purchase order receipt, or, you know, and all these things kind of, they all play into it, right? And everyone says, I don't have time to do all this review and all that stuff. Right, but you have time to fix it when it's all wrong. You actually, and, you know, I've seen it. So again, we talk about streamlining, is you spend so much more time fixing all the issues you had rather than saying, hey, let's just put a really good process in place that's clean and simple and efficient. And like, I go back to that idea of the daily, right? Is how do you put some things and say, I'm not asking you to do this. You know, every day you have my five transactions, just review those five. But if you wait till the end of the week, now you have 25. You wait till the end of the month, you have, you know, so you get where you go, right? So again, contract review is one of those things that I've seen time and time again, especially from the sales side too, right? How many times has it gone out? Then the client invoices it, you get the cost of goods, you think you're profitable. And the client says, what's this price? You said, that's not the price we agreed upon. How did this thing go out at $2.50? It's only $1.25. So meanwhile, you know, your books, you've closed your month and you get this, because the client hasn't got the invoice till month's closed. Then they tell you, that's not the price. And now you're doing a big rebate and you're kind of going back again. And then it's hard to, like, if those transactions have the month, that's a journalized entry and it may not go into your job, right? So the next time you go to run that job, you may not think, oh, that job did great last time, not knowing you had this massive rebate. So again, contract review sounds too easy, but it's a really good thing in place. I've seen a lot of horror stories in it, a lot.
Yeah, and that's a great point, by the way. And, you know, I'm actually going to build on top of that, to be honest. I mean, obviously, when you are going to have just one transaction, that's very hard. But let's talk about the inventory valuation, and especially if you have multiple entities, and that's where your transaction volumes are really going to be high. And I have seen, I'm actually going to tell you my story of one of the customers that we were working with. So here, the customer, I started telling them, hey, you are choosing to implement standard costing, which is a great idea. You have done standard costing in the past life because you didn't have a very capable ERP system. You were doing everything on paper. I get it. But now things have changed. Now you have a new ERP system. So you probably want to consider the inventory valuation so that you don't have too many variances that you have to figure out at the end of the month. No. We are too easy. We are too simple. This is how we do it. No problem. We got it. So Bob, let's say if I ask you, let's say if you have five different entities and that are doing the standard costing for all of the inventory that you are doing, as opposed to the actual valuation of the inventory, how would you react to that? What advice would you have for this executive who does not understand the implications of the trade-off or the trade-offs that you are going to get because you are making certain decisions to simplify your sales process for your customer processes?
My first piece of advice, which is, please don't. Please don't. It's pretty rare unless your plant has one resource and like one thing to do. If you have more than five or six or seven or eight transactions, unless it's something that's literally is just like it's completely machine related. If you had something like, I'll use the example of, you know, like the newspaper, right? The continuous feed, and you're making a newspaper. Yeah. It's almost like that's just, there's no human involved. It's just once you start the printing press, it goes. But that's not the norm. You know, you could probably standard cost, like there's so much going on, but if you have people involved in your machine process, you're going to want to do actual costing. because I just don't think that anybody thinks, they may think that they know what the standards are, but it really isn't. You'd have to be really on top of your game to know that. So I would say you want to do actual costing and do the analysis. And, you know, maybe there are some, maybe there's some lines in your business that you could go to standard costing, but unlikely. It's really, so anyway, I guess to answer your question, I would just say don't do it. I wouldn't recommend standard costing. I just don't see, and again, unless you have a completely stable machine-based process that has no humans involved whatsoever, and again, maybe very limited inventory, maybe you can get away with it. But I don't know. I don't know. My experience is I wouldn't go down that path. I think you're going to, like at the end, like you said, at the end of the month, you're going to be looking at all the, you're going to look at your cigar box, right? You're going to look at all your transactions and go, why don't I have any money in here? I should have money in here. There's no money in here, and I don't know why. And you're going to not know why. And it's going to, you're all going to just figure out why I don't have money.
And your financial executives are actually going to become the programmers, and they are going to be debugging just like your programmers. Okay, what the hell is happening here? Okay. Yeah. I'm working. Don't bother me. I'm trying to. Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Bob. Okay, Dave, from your perspective, you know, number one, horror stories, contract review, perspective on standard costing versus the actual costing. Any horrors that you have seen because of the variances that you are going to create? And in my experience, those variances do not add any business value whatsoever. Okay, the admins that you are bringing to your table just to reconcile your transaction, that's pure waste of money. In my experience, especially if you are buying an ERP system, please stay away from standard costing, as Bob pointed out. What is your experience? Do you see any businesses that might be, they might want to do standard costing by any chance?
Well, it's interesting that we're talking about this because the company that I had a significant amount of experience with, we did standard costing.
Okay.
And it was one of the most challenging things when we would acquire a business is to get somebody that was leading that facility, had P&L responsibility for that facility, to get them up to speed on not just how to implement standard costing, because we went through all of that. But then what do you do with it? You know, Sam, to your point, right? What do you do with all the variances? How do you reconcile all those transactions? And, you know, that's a life that I lived for many, many years. And it taught me a lot, taught me a lot of good things. It taught me a lot of horror stories as well. And, you know, Bob, I think you touched on it, but, you know, some of the worst things I would see when it came to standard costing was, you know, measure conversions, obviously inventory transactions, right? Those are the two things that would just, you know, as I say, kind of eat your lunch and send you down a rabbit hole of trying to figure out, well, exactly where did this come from? And to your point too, Bob, you have to reconcile that. You have to figure it out, because otherwise, you know, you're left at the end of the month saying, where's all the money at? You know, this doesn't make any sense. And so you're going through job by job and figuring out and looking at those variances. And you're trying to, you know, Scott, I think to your point, you know, you're trying to aggregate some of that and look at it from the macro, but pretty quick, you have to get into the weeds. At least that's been my experience with the standard costing. And I do feel that it brought a lot of value once you understood exactly how to implement it, exactly how to set standards. I mean, I don't want to get too far into you know, the ops side of things, but I'll quickly say it was really interesting to see somebody that was running a facility, responsible for a facility, that, to your point, Bob, had no idea what the standards really were. What did it really take to do XYZ process within, you know, this particular work center? So going through the entire gambit of that in the standard cost accounting implementation was a great learning lesson. I learned a lot of stuff. I learned a lot of stuff about finance and I learned a lot of stuff about operations. And I learned a lot about people during that process, believe it or not. So just a couple of quick things that I would point out in terms of things to be mindful of. That unit of measure, whether you're doing actual or standard, I always felt like that was a tricky one. Coming out of a print manufacturing facility where we would often buy in pounds, consume in feet, things like that. You know, you're buying in one unit of measure, but then you have to inventory it in a second, consume it in a third, and there's always remainders, right? So what do you do with the remainders? You try to consume them on press, so that way it clears out inventory, so you don't have this miscellaneous variance hanging out there that you have to find at the end of the month, and, you know, or dip into the negative, and then you've got, you know, physical inventory challenges with all that. It's interesting.
Okay, amazing points there. So I'm actually going to, you know, give you a fun exercise, Dave. So obviously, now that we have agreed, and Bob, you can counter this as well, by the way, if you have any perspective, just raise your hand, guys, you know, if you have any perspective on that. So now CFOs actually get, you know, continuous close. They understand this, why the continuous close is important, because they don't have to make as many calls. It makes their life easy. But combine the continuous, the only reason you are doing continuous close is any sort of, whether you are talking about operations, finance, you want to close to reality. You want to close to your physical processes as much as possible. So you don't have to do this reconciliation of, okay, what is my physical saying? What is my system saying? Okay, so that's why you want to close to the reality as possible. And that's the whole premise of continuous close. The only reason why you do the actual costing now is because you want to close to the reality, because actual costing is the close to the reality. Now, talk to the CFO, the person who is doing continuous close, because he or she gets it, but they are still utilizing standard costing. Can you believe this? So what would be your advice to the CFO who's doing standard costing with continuous close? Dave, that is for you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they got their hands full, right? That's kind of goes without saying. But I think for me, what it comes down to, or really what the advice would be, is there is power in having that continuous close, being able to look at that data on any kind of given basis. I mean, that was, you know, that was one of the things that I, you know, once again, once you get into this and once you really understand what you're looking at, that was the power of being able to have all of that information at your fingertips with the standard costing portion of it, as well as the continuous close, because you got a real picture, and you could either forecast where your month was going to end up at, which obviously became very powerful. And also you could forecast some of those surprises. You could start to see those variances coming, getting out of whack, and reconciling those before you're having to wait until the end of the month to then go ahead and take a look at it. It kind of, in my mind, to kind of harken back to like my continuous improvement days, that's the best way I can say it, is that when you have both of those things, yes, it's a lot to get them implemented, but once they're implemented and in place, the other portion of it is bringing people outside of the finance department into that mindset, because that's a big part of this. That's kind of the journey that, you know, that I had to go on, that I had to bring other people into. So I think once you get those two things together, it's a really powerful system at the end of it. It just takes a while to get from A to B, in my experience.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. Scott, what's been your experience? So, you know, we have a couple of points here that you want to touch on. Number one, horror stories, contract review, standard costing perspective on that, continuous close. Those are some points that you want to touch.
I mean, I think I defer to these guys a bit. Their expertise there is more in depth than mine. I just say that the comment Bob made about contract auditing, it really resonates with me, because I've seen it more from the purchase to pay side. Just the fact that things are being approved by requisitioners and companies who don't have time to review it, and the results are bad, and then it's creating all this junk downstream that is having to be fixed by other people. And if people would just do a little audit on whether their requisitioners are truly know what they're doing when they're approving stuff, they would be shocked. And if you really got your contract data and tried to see if your vendors were truly charging you what you agreed to, you would be shocked. And if you don't do a payables audit, you know, to find duplicate payments and fraud and things like that, then you're really missing out. So I've never had a company that I couldn't save money there. So I come at it from a little different perspective, but I agree with everything that these guys said, because I've heard it when I've interacted with the, you know, with the accounting team.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Scott. So Bob, I'm actually going to come back to you. So I am definitely going to ask you to touch on your perspective on, you have been very upfront that don't do standard costing, because that's a nightmare, right? Which is amazing. I completely agree with that. Now, let's say if a CFO is actually doing the standard costing and the continuous close together, what would be your advice to that? That is number one. And number two question I'm going to have for you is going to be to touching on the need of the financial data warehouse. I don't know if you have seen the need for the financial data warehouse. Why is that important? And that is going to be the question for everybody. Maybe you guys can share the story. So go, Bob.
Yeah, I would say kind of Dave touched on it a little bit. And what I'd say is the advice would be fine. Okay, we're going to go down this path, right? we're going to have standard costs. I'm not saying it. It's just we're going to go down this path. That's fine. What I would say is you need to have a really strong team from both sides of the fence. and they can't be adversarial. They've got to be working together. So you've got to have a really strong operations team that really has some good working knowledge of what it is, what's going on in the process, how it works, what's happening, but understand the financial implications of that, along with the technologists on your, the cost counter technologist side of your finance, and really have them work together. And they've got to be working together to say, okay, here's kind of what we need from finance perspective. Here's what it looks like. Here's the modeling. And then the operation saying, okay, trying to make sure that you got to build those standards. And neither side can do it alone. They really need each other. So that's really, to me, and it's always been the key. That's, again, when I go back to cost accounting, kind of where I came from. I came from operations and then got into finance and got into cost accounting, and that was part of my strength. Now I'm kind of an anomaly, so you won't have the one guy. So you got to have the two guys, but you got to bring those two parties together and have them play nice. Because it's in both of their best interests, right? If you have strong processes and you kind of build up why these things are important, contract review, kind of all those things, say, hey, these are the things we got to do if we're going to do continuous close. We got to be doing these things. You got to have those process reviews, costing, what we're doing. At the same time, I got to build all the right standards so that I can bring all the information out correctly. This is what it needs to look like. So that would be my advice. It's like, then you better get a strong team and you really got to figure this out. You got to nail that process down. You got to nail the materials down. Nail the conversions down, nail the contract down. You've got to have it all right. There's a former colleague used to say, you need to have a clean sand, smooth sand. That was it. Smooth sand. You think about when you kind of, it's got to be smooth sand. Everything's got to be right. Everything's got to be kind of all ready for you to go. So with that in mind, the financial data lake, yeah, I would recommend it, right? Because I think ERP in itself, the information is kind of segmented, right? It's transactional, but it's hard. Sometimes some transactions don't marry to each other. They're not related. You might have an inventory transaction, a labor transaction. They happen at the same time, but it's hard to pull those out meaningfully because they're not necessarily related. So you almost need to have that whole piece where you just kind of extract all the information, stick it over in a system, whether it's a BI or, some kind of BI tool to say, it's over here. And now I can have a solution architect go in there and say, okay, now I'm going to figure out how to meaningfully bring these spheres of data together to bring results out of it. So it's usually best to pull it out, to say, just kind of get it all out in a clean and efficient manner, bring it out meaningfully, and then kind of work it in there. Because ERP, just basic reporting, is not going to give you what you need. It's going to be kind of difficult. And what you want to avoid, of course, is the whole Excel piece, right? What I don't want people to do is export their ERP stuff into Excel and just sit there and futz around with it, because that really doesn't, again, you're spending a lot of time. Remember, you talk about the guy month end close and the guy's really busy because he's, every month he's kind of, that's the guy doing it in Excel, right? He's crushing it in Excel and it's killing him. So you want to have a really robust tool. So I would agree with the data lake thing. If there's a lot of great robust tools out there, there's no reason why not to implement one in conjunction with your ERP system.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Bob, for that. So, Dave, I'm actually going to come back to you. Any perspective on the financial data warehouse? Why do you need that? Any perspective on financial reporting? Any stories around that?
Yeah, I think Bob did a great job of articulating it. I agree wholeheartedly. In all of the implementations I've been a part of and systems that I've worked through, they have all had a separate BI reporting piece that pulls the data, aggregates what you're really looking for, and does it in the most efficient manner. I have seen some people try to pull information directly from the ERP and try to work with that, whether it's in Excel or something like that. And it does very quickly become a nightmare because, oftentimes you've got people not understanding table relationships and going and trying to do this manual table relationship within Excel or something crazy because they have a very specific piece that they want to look at. And I'll say the other thing in my experience that I find oftentimes directly related to kind of this, the BI part, right? The business intelligence part. And that is oftentimes, especially during an acquisition or a new implementation, I've said this before, no matter what kind of system implementation we're talking about, oftentimes people get used to seeing the things that they've seen before. And what I mean by that is ask the question, why do we really need to look at this piece of data that you're asking for, right? Is it possible to look at it? Sure. ERP is amazing for that. It's possible to look at pretty much anything on a transaction basis. But what's the reason? What are we really going to do with this data? How are we going to use this data to drive improvement? What are we going to do? Let's bring it back to finance, right, Sam? What are we going to do with this data to drive financial improvements throughout the operation? And if the answer is, well, I don't know, this is what I've always looked at, then that, you know, sorry. And that's, you know, that's kind of what I've seen time and time again. And we could be talking about this. We could be talking about some other types of systems that get implemented. But I always go back to those couple of things. Whatever, if you have ERP and you are looking to improve ERP or upgrade ERP, or if you have no ERP and you're looking to go to ERP, I would challenge you to say, look at the processes that are required throughout your operation, throughout your business, and create the system for those processes and what you want them to be, not only today, but future-proofed, right? Do that with the reporting piece. Do that with every aspect of your system implementation, and you will really have something powerful inside of your business to propel you forward into the future. So
I am actually going to have a funny thing on, you know, what you just mentioned about the table, you know, product. I mean, that was a clear financial masterpiece. And we are going to ask these guys to make some cold calls. I'm pretty sure somebody's willing to buy that. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. Okay, Scott, I'm actually going to come back to you for your, you know, financial data warehouse. Why is it needed? And financial reporting, do you have any stories around that?
You know, getting your, we haven't talked much about data, you know, so I think the other element is making sure all your data is, you know, clean and that you've got a good process for not letting bad data in. And what I've seen is that garbage in, garbage out, and that if you don't really focus on getting your data right from the start, then, you know, you can have the fanciest data warehouse in the world, but it's not going to give you good information. So, but I do think that there's some really powerful tools out there for reporting and can add a lot of value, but just wanted to mention the point on data. And we didn't talk about that. Is back to the original comment, you know, there's tools out there that can help you with that. And some of the ERPs have them and some don't. But you should really be thinking about bolting on a tool that'll help you get your data in and get it in right so that your system is running appropriately and that you're periodically getting rid of the crap of your data. Because if you don't, you're going to be a mess. And we didn't talk about the one point about, you know, what would you recommend for a company just starting? One of your first questions, get all your processes documented in process flows with swim lanes. I don't even want to talk to a company if they don't have, unless they're going to go down that journey. If you don't have all your processes documented with swim lanes, you're going to be a mess and you're not going to grow. And if you don't get your data right from the start. So some of those are, you know, some basic principles in getting your controls right.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for those insights. So the only thing we can take right now is going to be closing advice. So, you know, we are going to limit to just one sentence. Okay, so Bob, what is going to be your closing advice in one sentence?
Streamline your process and know what data you really need to measure.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Bob. Dave, what is your closing advice in one sentence?
Make sure that you have a very clear and as flat as you can make it, chart of accounts, whether you're going into ERP or in doing an upgrade.
Love that. Super crisp financial advice. Thank you so much. Okay, Scott, closing advice, one sentence.
I would say document your process and remember that you will only get what you measure. So you have to have the right measures.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. That's it for today. On that note, thank you so much, everybody, for your time and insight.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Bob Feathers, follow and connect with him on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about Dave Chrysler, head over to thechrysler.club. It's thechrysler.club. If you want to learn more about Scott Engelking, head over to gvintegration.com. It's gvintegration.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Jeannie Doherty, who discusses how strategic bookkeeping differs from tactical bookkeeping. Also, the interview with Brian Goffenberg from Vital Hub, who discusses the difference between accounting for a public and private company. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.